Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Tag Podcast.
Hello.
We're so happy to be here, and we're so glad you came.
And we're not doing another sleepy podcast. I promise you that.
We're awake,
never,
we're alert.
Yeah.
Sorry, last week's podcast has gone out in mono sound as opposed to magnificent stereo sound. Due to sleepy restrictions, recording wasn't what it could have been. But never mind, that's fine. We'll move on and carry on.
So this week we're going to talk about a topic that is kind of a little bit taboo in most of what we talk about, because I kind of dominate a lot of the conversations with this. If it's Disney, if it's How to Train Your Dragon, if it's internet memes, I'll find a way to relate it back to Marvel. So today, it's not just Marvel we're going to talk about. We're going to talk directly about the X-Men. And, you know, because we're probably going to dip into just general Marvel.
Yeah. We'll cover X-Men mainly, but yeah, there's been a lot of cinematic announcements and the latest trailer, so we'll be chatting about those too.
Gotta be excited. Okay, so let's start, we're dating
this discussion quite heavily, so
we don't usually try to do topical ones, but this is pretty topical. But, you know, we'll do it about X-Men.
X-Men will be more general.
Let's start
off the X-Men.
Let's start with Joss Whedon.
Okay.
Joss Whedon's run on the X-Men, which...
Astonishing X-Men volumes 1 to 4.
Which you lent me... I believe you lent me volume 1 and 2, did you?
I think I lent you volume 1 and 2.
Since then I've read 3 and 4 as well. And, I think I may have mentioned on the podcast already that my favourite X-Men is Kitty Pryde. So, for anyone listening who hasn't read the spectacular Astonishing X-Men by James, I've promised I'm not doing a sleepy podcast, and I'm actually quite sleepy. I've just gone to call him James Whedon. I don't even know who I've crossed over there. The spectacular Joss Whedon run on X-Men. Anyway, Astonishing X-Men. If you haven't read it and you want to, don't listen to this podcast because I'm going to ruin it.
Spoilery. I know our two regular listeners have read it all.
Good.
All the Joss Whedon run. And one of them, Sam, I believe it's one Sam recommended to me. Oh. I'm not sure if he'd read it already, but he certainly recommended it to me, as it follows on from a series that he has that I read, New X-Men.
Yeah.
Which was, I believe, Grant Morrison? I'm not 100% sure. I might be remembering that wrong.
Not quite up to date with names of artists and writers, I'm not going to lie.
No. But that basically covered the death, the sort of once and for all death of Jean Grey. Which she's stayed dead since then.
Which is good, really.
Yeah, I mean, they brought back a younger version of herself.
They didn't do that story to bring her back. They did that story and went, oh, well, we're going to have to bring her back because, you know, historically speaking, she was there at the time. It deals with that. I know it deals with that. I know it has Jean Grey. I know it has a lot to do with Professor Xavier and all the moral implications of what Professor Xavier's done. Because this is, I think this is the first time. I know you know, a few times over the history of X-Men, Professor Xavier's come off as a bit of a dick.
Yes.
But this is the be-all, end-all of, whoa, Charles Xavier, you're a cunt.
I think this it sort of marks the period of everyone of the general opinion of Professor X turning.
Yes.
In the, it's set as I say just after Jean Grey dies once and for all, and just after he's left the school as the headmaster.
Yeah.
So not exactly after then, but it's that's where it's picking up from.
Yeah. It's not like directly after, like the next day.
Yeah.
But no, the events certainly follow on from.
When sort of somewhat, I guess, from when Scott and Emma finally become a thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're flirting around each other, certainly, in the first volume.
The first you see of them is in bed together, and Wolverine comes in and throws Cyclops out the window or something.
Yeah. You know, they're sniffing around each other, but... I obviously didn't really pay attention to that story because the only storyline that really mattered to me in that, and I've said it before, Kitty Pryde is my favorite X-Men.
The run is very much through her eyes to an extent.
Oh yeah.
It begins with her. She's been asked to come back as a teacher, and her coming back and reminiscing, and the first day of the new term. And some sort of attack. It's been a little while since I read it, so I can't remember very well.
But yeah, she comes back, and then there's some aliens, and they have to go into space, and...
Yeah.
And
the introduction of Danger as a character as well.
Yeah, well, that's volume two, isn't it?
When the Danger Room becomes sentient.
Room becomes sentient. That's really... When you find out that Danger is sentient, that's when you really go, whoa, Professor Xavier knew about this?
Oh, yes.
That's the big thing.
There's a beautiful moment at the end of that volume where they all find out that he knew the Danger Room had become sentient and didn't do anything about it and just left it sort of trapped there as a room. And they all sort of lower their heads and turn their back on it. Professor, we are so disappointed. And walk away as he stares off into the sea.
You know, Kitty Pryde dies. I know, not forever. Well, I mean, technically, I suppose, really.
She doesn't really die at all.
She doesn't die, but there's the implication that she dies.
Jeez.
And then they brought her back and sort of almost rewrote it so that she lived. Not rewrote it as such, but sort of.
I don't think Joss Whedon's.
Do I need to list every character that Joss Whedon's killed off?
No,
he meant to kill her off.
No, I don't think he intended to kill her off.
I think he knew, knowing that nobody dies in comic books anymore.
Possibly, yes, but I don't think he thought, you know, this is the last I ever want to see of this character. And therefore, I'll kill her off. I think he knew full well that she would come back because he wrote her so well and developed her.
That's the thing. I mean, like, looking at
so it would be such a terrible waste.
Yeah, looking at
not to have brought her back.
Looking at a lot of the Kitty Pryde stories, there's a fair few back in the day where she's just sort of token character, token Jew on the team, things like that, and then. There's a couple of storylines where she represents the youth of the X-Men and everything. And this is the first time I feel that they've really gone sort of like, other than with the Excalibur storylines where she's not so much part of the X-Men there. She's sort of an established, well-established character that they've gone, okay, well, let's use this character. But this is the first time they've used her in the premise of X-Men where they've really gone, okay, let's see how this character's developed. And of course, with Joss Whedon, he loves his strong female characters anyway. You look at Buffy, you look at Dollhouse, you look at Firefly. You know, he likes his strong female characters, and that's what he's made of. And I think that's one of the things he's really...
It's nice to see her sort of being very useful, too, in the storylines, because it's one of those things you think, oh, well, she can just walk through walls. It's one of those things that, no, it's a brilliant power. And that's one of the few things... I actually really enjoy from X-Men The Last Stand. And I know it's a bad film overall. Well, it's a bad X-Men film overall, mm-hmm. certainly. But Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde in that is one of the things I actually really enjoyed, and I liked just the very simple little playing with her powers they did.
Yeah.
When she's facing off against the Juggernaut at the end.
Yeah. I see. Like you say, X-Men Last Stand, not a great film. As far as films go, it's probably one of the worst Marvel ones. I know it's not Marvel, but I'm, you know, talking Marvel, sort of just in general, not just MCU. But you can see with Days of Future Past that Bryan Singer has seen that all the good things that did come out of X-Men Last Stand, and he's still used them, he's still taken those and continued them. Like the story between Iceman and Kitty Pryde. You know, to a lesser extent, the idea that Rogue lost her powers. I know that she did have a scene in the film.
Oh, yes,
that
was
so
there was
cut
a cut scene,
out,
wasn't there?
And I've cheekily gone online to find out what the special features are of the Blu-ray, and I'm very disappointed to hear that her scene isn't on the Blu-ray release yet.
Is it not? I thought it was going to be on both the DVD and the Blu-ray.
That's what I thought, and now I'm starting to believe that in a couple of years we're probably going to get a special edition, you know, director's cut of Days of Future Past, probably to tie in at around about the same time that X-Men Apocalypse comes out. It's maybe sort of a, oh, do you remember how good this film was? Well, now you've got the Bryan Singer cut featuring more Rogue and more kissing between Storm and Wolverine. But, you know, with the story that they presented on the screen anyway, in X-Men Last Stand, Rogue had lost her powers. I know that obviously, you know, Magneto did, and he got his powers back, so the argument could be made that, you know...
I think the argument at the end of that is that, you know, the cure wasn't a cure after all.
Yeah.
You know, it works, but it's only temporary.
But that's not to say that that happened to everyone, sort of thing. Maybe just only the strongest or something
not.
Like that.
Yeah, but maybe so only those who really wanted to push their powers back.
I was willing to accept that Rogue wasn't in the film. But, you know, Bryan Singer took the best bits. And of course, one of those best bits was the utilization of Kitty Pryde. Now, obviously, me personally, I feel that he didn't use her enough in Days of Future Past, considering that in the original comics, it's set in the Kitty Pryde is the Days of Future Past main character.
Yeah, although it's Katie Pryde or something, isn't it?
Because she's from the future.
Because it's from an alternate future.
So, but it's just, or you know, of course I'd have loved to have seen her going into the past with Wolverine, or just a bit more from Ellen Page, because, I mean, that's the thing. It's not just that Kitty Pryde is a good character. It's the fact that he's got Ellen Page playing her as well. Mm, Ellen Page is great. It was, you know, it was certainly
not. One of the things I was a little sad. I am very annoyed in a way that they cut the scene from Days of Future Past with Rogue as well, because thinking back to that film, it was good. The whole thing was good, but it was the future parts that I enjoyed far more than the 70s parts.
Oh yeah, yeah, 70s. Yeah. And the most annoying thing about that film, I feel, is I don't think we're ever going to get those, or at least that cast, back together again.
No, I'd probably not.
And The only
chance I can see is maybe in the next Wolverine film.
Yeah, we might get a couple of them, but I mean, it was a nice farewell, don't get me wrong, but it was kind of too nice. It was kind of like, oh my god, I've remembered what I love about these guys.
The original cast is so it was so great to see them all back, and
it's a shame because I love. I love Michael Fassbender as Magneto, and I like James.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. The new cast are very good too. James McAvoy is good.
You know, I'm somewhat in love with Jennifer Lawrence anyway, so her as Mystique works perfectly fine for me.
I think she's good, but I think I hope that she's not too much the focus of the next film, because I think
she was a bit sort of, you know, heavy on the, in this last film.
Yeah.
But the storyline did permit it, I suppose.
No, it did.
You know, the original Days of Future Past comic did feature Mystique, you know, in a large role. So I'm hoping the next film isn't going to be X-Men Apocalypse featuring Apocalypse for the last 12 minutes of the film.
Well, we can't.
Because I was a little bit disappointed that with Days of Future Past, we've had all this promotional material about the Sentinels. And okay, the Sentinels were the main focus of the film, but they were barely fucking in it, except for in the future. And as
future
much,
Sentinels were very much in it. But
as I liked the future Sentinels, they'd been created for the film. I wanted to see the original sort of comic book design.
And in the end, the fight was only with one of them.
And
it wasn't a very long fight.
It was one of them, and Wolverine was thrown away, which I loved, by the way, because Wolverine is far too overused in those films. You know, Wolverine was just out of the fight completely, and then it was over. And there was some more talking. Now, don't get me wrong, the film was brilliant, but I'd just love to have seen a bit more Sentinel.
Yeah.
Just one confrontation before...
On the topic of less Wolverine, what are your thoughts on...
It's about time. I know what you're going to say. It's about time.
I was going to say, what are your thoughts on Channing Tatum as Gambit?
Oh, I thought
to replace Wolverine as the connecting character, the one who appears in everything.
They tried to do Gambit before, and they failed.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to do it with Channing Tatum. Now, don't get me wrong, Channing Tatum is Southern. And so he does kind of have the accent anyway. But that's not to say that I'm going to look at sort of hunky Channing Tatum and think, yeah, that's dirty Gambit. Gambit's got to be dirty, you know.
Yeah.
They need someone like...
That's the thing. I feel he's almost a bit too buff.
Yeah, he is definitely.
Because Gambit's always sort of, you know, he's... You know, not he's fit.
He's not particularly muscly. Yeah, he's lean, but he's not muscly. And Channing Tatum isn't lean; he's muscly. I feel maybe they should have got someone different to play him, but I had the same theory about Evan Peters as Quicksilver. I thought actually Evan Peters was a bit too podgy, a little bit too round. Didn't really like his casting at all. Saw the film, and then since then as well, I've seen American Horror Story. And I'm just on the Evan Peters train. Like, he is one of my favourite people in the business at the moment. And I'm really looking forward to seeing X-Men Apocalypse with a much bigger role for Quicksilver, because I'm glad they've seen that he was successful and gone, right, we need more of Evan Peters.
I love that sort of after his part in the after his bit of the film, they say, well, thanks, Quicksilver. Goodbye. You sure I can't be in the rest of the movie? No, you'd be far too useful.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
there'd be no plot devices or action sequences. You'd just solve it all instantly.
Exactly.
So we're going to leave you here and have the rest of the movie be an hour, not 5 minutes.
But that's why I feel he needs to be a bad guy from now on. Not so much a bad guy, but more a less than helpful force.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, with it being an Apocalypse film, do you think we're going to see much of a Brotherhood of Mutants, or...?
I think we're possibly going to see something along the lines of the X-Men Legends 2 Rise of Apocalypse game, in which at the start of the film... Magneto approaches the X-Men and says, there's this guy, Apocalypse, and he's going to fuck shit up. Now I'm willing to help you if you're willing to help me. And the X-Men sort of go, wait, why are you telling us this? And he's like, well, because, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So I think we might see, I know we're definitely going to see the start, they've confirmed, we're definitely going to see the start of the real, sort of like, as sort of all modern audiences know them, X-Men, in that we're seeing a young Jean Grey, a young Storm, and a young Cyclops.
Yeah. I love that. There was one little thing in that niggled a little with me in Days of Future Past. When Wolverine is saying to young Professor Xavier, you know, you've got to find, whatever happens, you've got to find these kids. Scott, Jean, Storm. Storm's her code name. She's not going to be walking around wherever it is in Africa she lives saying, hey, my name's Storm. No, it's Aurora.
I didn't even notice that until you'd said it.
You not noticed that? That bugged me a bit, I will say.
That's the thing, they haven't. I don't think they've ever really established her name well.
No, that's the point.
So he can't say Scott, Jean and Aurora.
Actually, no, they have mentioned it at least a couple of times, because in the older films, but not in that film, so
yeah. But there are going to be the younger versions of those characters in it.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see at least the development of the Brotherhood, one or two maybe. A few more would probably be overkill, and I wouldn't be surprised if Quicksilver was one of those.
Which,
you know, plays into the comics perfectly because that's how it happened. You know, and I would love.
Will his little sister be there with him?
Well, this is the thing. Will she? I think personally, it's going to depend on how well the Avengers does, because they've done such a good sort of thing with Evan Peters. Are they going to want to rock the boat if Avengers pulls it off as well? But I really, really hope we see nothing more of the whole I'm your dad thing. Like, there was that great little moment in Days of Future Past where I can't even remember what it was. Something like Evan Pitt.
My mom used to know a guy who could do that.
And then Michael Fassbender just has one very brief, fleeting look of, oh shit. Oh well. I hope we see nothing more of that. Only because I think to reveal that, not so much to reveal it, but to bring that into the story implies that there needs to be some content to it. They can't just throw it in there. There needs to be some sort of like relationship built and things like that. Because eventually Quicksilver learns to hate his father. And then there's obviously the on and off.
As every son should.
Yeah, obviously. And then there's the on and off sort of like, he's my dad, I love him. And, he's my dad, then let's stop him. So I'd like to see that play. I wouldn't like to see that play into the films because there's just not enough time. And as far as X-Men villains go, in my books, Apocalypse is the best. He's certainly the most domineering, is the best way of putting it. He, you know, if Apocalypse got too heavy-handed, it wouldn't just be the X-Men who'd have to deal with him, it would have to be everybody. And we see that in Age of Apocalypse, because everybody's fucked in Age of Apocalypse, because he's just messed everything up so much. So I really want X-Men Apocalypse to focus on Apocalypse. You know, not like when they did Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and the Silver Surfer was in it for about 7 minutes, Galactus didn't even appear in it. Just a cloud of CGI shite appeared instead and called itself Galactus. And that appeared on screen for about 30 seconds. So, but it is Bryan Singer directing again, and I'm confident that he knows what he's doing. And there have been comments that some of the old cast are going to appear in the next film in some way. I'm really hoping it's not going to be another time travel story.
Just
because...
I'm not sure. Well, then again, I understand, you know, it's a sort of reality altering thing, but I kind of don't want to see that.
Mm.
I like the old cast, and don't get me wrong, you know, I'd love to see a film with just them.
Just them again. And they call it X-Men 4 as well. In fact, no, they should call it X-Men 3.
Probably should. But I kind of, after the whole Days of Future Past, I think I just want to have it as the new groups. Yeah.
The only thing I feel needs to be rectified in the future now is I'm willing to accept Scott and Gina alive. I'm willing to accept that everything's changed and it's kind of gone back to the comic-y book style X-Men. You know, with they showed Rogue and Bobby together. They showed Kitty and Colossus there, the big fucking metal prick. but they changed the whole sort of William Stryker thing right at the end. They showed it to be Mystique, who was William Stryker, and picking Wolverine out of the water. And so that, I feel, needs to be rectified, like what happened there. But there is a Wolverine 3, so I'm hoping there's going to be some explanation as to what went on in it there.
Oh, so, there was one thing that, one line that really annoyed me in Days of Future Past. Again, you know, the more I think about it, the more niggles I have with the film.
That's the thing with time travel films, though. Like, as soon as you start actually picking it apart, you start to find holes.
Well, no, this isn't a picking apart. This isn't a picking it apart thing. This is a. God, that was so on the nose. Michael Fassbender saying to Wolverine, "Have you ever considered coating your bones in metal?" Basically, he's like, "Come on, really, really? Yeah. It's so."
Like, there's no thought process to actually make you think that.
Yeah, exactly.
There was no natural process in your head that made you
whatsoever
go...
Whatsoever.
Like, if it had been, like, that he was trying to cut through something, and then, you know, he could have then maybe gone, imagine if they were metal, you'd be able to cut through this no problem. At least there'd be a natural thought process. It would still be like, oh, for fuck's sake. But at least there would have been some context to it, not just sitting on a plane. Imagine if they were coated in metal.
That'd be cool, eh?
Don't think that, Magneto. Don't think that. Because I want to surprise you.
It's almost as if, you know... Why not just turn to the audience and fucking wink? That was a little niggle with I say, nothing to do with the storyline.
No. Okay, so obviously we know who my favourite X-Men character is. I'm quite vocal about it. Who's yours?
Again, probably Kitty Pryde.
Yeah.
You know, I do like her a lot. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. Nope. Just
that.
I do like Storm a lot. I have to say, I do like Storm a lot. I think she's a great X-Men, and she's nicely flawed as well.
Although the thing with Storm is it's not Storm's fault with my niggle with Storm. It's more my niggle with the storyline of Storm is that she married the Black Panther, and there's no disguising the fact that they went, well, she's our most popular black female character, and he's our most popular black male character. Shall they marry? And they did, and then there was the whole during the Avengers versus X-Men thing. He's like, I'm going to speak to the tribe's religious master or something and get the marriage annulled. And she was like, but you are the chief, you are the religious master. He's like, I know, leave now. And he's like, oh god, you could right. First of all, you're splitting up with your wife for a ridiculous reason. And secondly, you did it in the worst possible way. Like, I think she'd rather get a text message written in Chav lingo saying, "You are dumped," than be told that, you know. Yeah. What a penis. But no, I've never.
My God, this is so horrible and superficial of me, but my biggest niggle with Storm is I don't like her mohawk.
Yeah, I don't like her.
I like her long straight hair, yeah. A full head of hair. I don't like the mohawk.
No, see, I thought Halle Berry was a good cast for.
Yeah, no, it's one of Halle Berry's characters. I think is really spot on.
Not quite as good as Catwoman, well, but
leaving Catwoman aside.
I hope no one thinks I'm
yeah,
sick.
No, I think Halle Berry works very well as Storm, but not, you know.
She's not African enough, though.
Storm
did come from Africa. True, she wasn't an American. She came from Africa.
She did come over when she was very young.
I'm willing to overlook that little sort of detail because I like the character and I like Halle Berry in it. But
yeah.
So who's your least favourite X-Men?
God.
Mine's quite controversial, I think.
Ooh, controversial, eh?
Aye. And it's not who you think it is either. Did you think I'm going to say Colossus? As much as he is
I didn't, but I do now, but now I don't.
You know, as much as he's a brutish metal oaf, who frankly has all the context and character of a piece of wood. The thing I don't like about Colossus is that he doesn't deserve Kitty Pryde, and I'm glad that he had her taken away from him. When he decided that he was going to be the Juggernaut. So, but no, my least favourite character, and this isn't because he's a bad character, it's because, and I have already said this, he's massively overused in everything, is Wolverine. And it's a shame, because he's a good character. And, you know, there are some great storylines with Wolverine. One of the things I loved in The Astonishing X-Men, the Joss Whedon one, was when was it Emma Frost turned him into a child in his head?
Yes,
and he was
yes.
Running around like a little girl.
Emma Frost, when the sort of the leech of Cassandra Nova sort of left over in her brain.
That's really funny and that's a nice little play with the character. And the death of Wolverine, from what I've read so far, isn't a bad series either, and I'm kind of glad that they killed him off in the way they did. But of course, in comic book style,
how have they done it? Because I'm not sure I'll ever get around to reading it.
Well, you'd think that, and I thought they were going to do it this way as well, you'd think they'd sort of go out with a big bang, you know, and a big glorious showdown fight, and, you know. But he's known his healing factor isn't there for a while, and so he knows that it's only a matter of time. And the storyline leads him to the point where he's in a room with three new Weapon X's, basically. They're going to have adamantium fused into their bones from this giant vat, and he destroys the vat, and so the vat of adamantium just sort of pours all over him. Scalds his skin, but these three test subjects didn't have healing capabilities. They were given a synthetic formula that would give them that power. And one of the final frames is Wolverine reaching for the synthetic formula that was left over, and you don't quite know whether he picked it up or not. So for all intents and purposes, he's dead. But no doubt, just as X-Men Apocalypse is coming out, there'll be a big thing. Wolverine's back. No, but for now he's dead.
Well, I think it's a good thing to even if it's just for a while to have him out.
Just to let some character development.
Yeah, he bled into so many. You know, he's in about three. You know, he's in a couple of Avengers comics as well. Then he was in almost every X-Men comic.
At the same time as the X-Men. You know,
yes.
One day he's in space and the next day he's in Vancouver and you're like, fuck me, he's got some decent air miles going on here. Because, yeah. You know. But no, absolutely. And he.
I guess Nightcrawler's back, so maybe Nightcrawler's just teleporting him.
Yeah, true. Probably that.
But it's as I say, you're quite right in that he's the character's been massively overdone, and it's good.
So
they're giving him a break.
So who's your least favourite then?
I'm not sure I could pinpoint a least favourite, but at the minute, I'm not madly keen on North Star. Because although he's not a terrible character, but I find he's never sort of, whenever what I've seen of him, he's never quite written sort of well enough. He's a bit of a flimsy character, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
He never seems to sort of really settle to anything, and it's nice. Yes, and it's very good that they had the big gay wedding, his big gay wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that, but now mm-hmm. he's sort of since then, he's become sort of a sort of main member of the X-Men, or at least the Astonishing / Amazing X-Men,
mm-hmm.
as it's become now.
Yeah.
He's main cast on that, and he's just never particularly pleasant, and there's nothing you know. Maybe it's the fact that I wanted to like him.
Yeah, yeah.
When I found out about him and heard about him, and he's just not very engaging, to be honest. Not particularly intelligent.
Yeah.
He's sort of there's you know, some nice bits when his husband Kyle's in danger from getting killed by some anti-mutant people saying, "Oh, you're a mutant lover," literally.
Yeah.
And North Star sort of punches him at the speed of sound.
Highlights out of their hair.
He did. He punched the highlights out of his hair.
Cool. Just very briefly off of that, I watched the Sneaky Zebra. Sneaky Zebra. Winter Comic Con video.
Oh yes,
very good.
Good is it? I know. I love that Scott Pilgrim little.
But watch it again, right? Just look in the background and compare it to the summer one, and there's so much empty space.
I know the place looks empty. We should have gone.
We really should have gone. Like, next year, I'm definitely going to the Winter Comic Con.
That sounds like a plan.
Because that's the thing as well. I posted on the Marvel Cosplay UK wall, and I said how it was really good to see some faces that I'd met last summer. Like, because there was the guy that was Nick Fury when we were doing all the photos, that was playing comic book white Nick Fury, and he was Nick Fury from the Howling Commandos. And he featured in the Sneaky Zebra video, and there was a couple of others that I recognised immediately. And I was like, oh my God, you guys got in it, sort of thing. And I just think with less of a talent pool, you know, maybe
your star could shine a little brighter.
Yeah, and maybe we'd then feature in a Sneaky Zebra video that wasn't just us quietly judging the Game of Thrones.
Ladies.
Yeah.
Well, he's actually done there's actually been another one released since, which was an MCM.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever it is.
There was a big MCM one recently.
Yeah. Again,
they did a panel there as well, I believe.
Oh, right. The music video that's come out of that.
Yeah.
Really nicely, in the same way that the LFCC one has sort of Scott Pilgrim walk around montage.
Yeah.
At the end, this one at the end has a wild Thornbreeze.
Oh, sweet! Wow.
Right, and it starts with Eliza, and then goes to her mum, and then goes to Nigel.
Yeah.
And then Darwin, and there's a woman dressed up as Donnie. Oh, and Debbie too. There's a woman doing a brilliant sort of grumpy looking Debbie.
Yeah. I was thinking the other day, seeing Scott Pilgrim one and thinking, you know, characters that aren't really represented a lot in videos like that, and I don't see a lot of it. I'd love to go as like some lesser known Simpsons characters. Not so much lesser known, but secondary characters. So instead of going like as Homer and Marge, I'd like to go as like me as Ned Flanders and Dr. Nick. Dr. Nick, things like that, you know, like and just sort of like characters that are immediately recognisable, but you wouldn't immediately think, oh, I want to dress up as that person.
Yeah.
And I'd love to do that. I think I'm going to work on a Ned Flanders costume. I'll go as a white Ned Flanders. I'm not going to yellow myself up. I want it to look quite natural, but still immediately go, oh, it's Ned Flanders.
As long as you've got the tie and the green pullover.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's a pretty easy costume to do, so long as you can get the mustache and the hair and the glasses and everything right. So,
hey there. I've made a Zinker sniffer.
But we're digressing. Let's go on to the recent announcements.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to this.
Let's see.
Do you know the timeline yet of the movies that are coming out?
I don't know I've seen the order they're coming out in, and it all looks pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean.
Are they all in order in their release order? Or
I can get you the release order in just a second. Phase 3.
Because I'm very much looking forward to that. In fact, I think all of them. I'm sure there's one I'm not looking forward to. Except possibly. The Inhumans, but I don't know anything about The Inhumans.
Yeah, I don't really know a lot about The Inhumans. What I do know is that Vin Diesel, when he was given the role of Groot, wasn't originally going in for the role of Groot. And no one has ever confirmed who he was going in for. But he sort of left a couple of Twitter messages and specifically used the word Inhuman in them, so everyone thinks he's going to be Black Bolt. Which I could, you know, I could get behind. I'm a fan of Vin Diesel anyway. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing something like that. So,
yeah.
Okay, I have up the timeline now. So, we've got Avengers Age of Ultron I mean, for us it's April, but officially it's May. Annoyingly, you've got Ant-Man that follows that is Phase 2 still. I feel that Phase 2 should be rounded off with the Avengers, really.
Well, you know, I'm going to give Ant-Man its due. A lot of people are ragging on it because, oh, Edgar Wright's got kicked off it. Well, yep, no, that is a shame.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean, you know, that you have to go in with a grumpy face and crossed arms.
No, I'm going to give Ant-Man all of the credit it's due. However, I still feel like, is it going to be a strong enough movie to round off Phase 2? By all means, use it as a way of opening new doors to Phase 3, and that's what I'm hoping that we're going with.
Well, people have been saying, have been calling Avengers 2 the end of Phase 2.
So yeah.
Maybe it'll be more of a bridging film.
Yeah. So then we've got Captain America Civil War, and they've already confirmed that the rumblings of the Civil War are going to start in Avengers 2, and that by the end of Avengers 2, the Avengers roster will never be the same. Mm. So quite clearly they're going to fall out with Iron Man in this film, because Robert Downey Jr. has said he's basically the villain of Captain America 3. He's going to play the antagonist. I'm sure they're not going to make him a villain, as in, but
no, he'll just everyone should register.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a secret identity. Yeah. I don't see why anyone.
And at the announcement of all of this, they announced who was going to play the Black Panther, and they've said he's going to have a major role in the Civil War film. I think Black Panther is going to play the role that Spider-Man played in the comics, in that he's a superhero that a few people know, and his allegiances are torn between the two, and he chooses Tony Stark, reveals his identity, probably loses somebody close to him because of it, and then joins Captain America.
Yeah.
What interests me about the timeline so far is I thought Captain America 3 was coming after Avengers 3. I'm not sure why I thought that now, but because of that, I know that Chris Evans won't die at the end of Civil War because he's already contracted to appear in Avengers. He's already contracted to be in it. Now, if it's in a much smaller role and it's just sort of like a little cameo of him dying in Captain America Civil War, fair play. They've done that, you know, they've managed to get that. But I'm kind of hoping that he doesn't die now because I'd like to see him in Avengers 3. But if he does, so well. But in Civil War, at least in the comics, there is a problem with Thor in that he's dead and they have a clone. And the clone is called Ragnarok. And I know they did.
But Thor Ragnarok comes after Civil War, so.
Yeah. Now, I know there was a comic series called Ragnarok, but I can't help but notice that Civil War's here as well. And that had something to do with the clone.
Well, it might not be. It'll be interesting to see where they take it, because it might not be sort of. It might not be, you know, Earth clones.
No.
Cloned Thor, you know, because that's what I like about the cinematic universe is that they'll take something and give it a twist.
Yeah. I mean, with Avengers, I think we are going to see another character die, and now I'm thinking it's going to be Thor, and I think Thor is going to return somehow in Thor Ragnarok, and I have a feeling it's actually going to play into what you've been joking about this entire time, that in the comic books, they could just walk into the underworld and get back. I think we're going to see a meteor roll from Lady Sif and the Warriors 3 retrieving Thor to stop Loki, you know, destroying Asgard, yeah. In which case, I expect we're going to see Thor die in the next film. Which would be nice.
He's my favourite.
Yeah, but he's going to be in it again, don't worry. There might be a chance that Thor won't appear at all in Civil War. And actually, to sort of harden the blow even more, it'll actually be a mistake on Tony Stark's part that ends up killing a character. Because obviously in the Civil War comics, Giant Man dies. And he dies as a giant, and so they have to dig something like 40 graves just to bury him. So that mistake has to be in the film. A mistake of that scale has to be in the film where someone loses their life for something that wasn't meant, you know, was never meant to have bloodshed altogether. I'm hoping that it's Tony Stark
does it,
or at very least Tony Stark has the Thor clone. But you know, if we're getting Chris Hemsworth in it as well, let's just get Mark Ruffalo in it and call it Avengers 2.5, you know. So after Civil War we have Doctor Strange. Rumours flying around that Benedict Cumberbumber is going to be Doctor Strange, which I quite like. I could see Benedict Cumberbatch as.
I think he would do it excellently.
Yeah. After that, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which, you know, needless to say, I'm looking forward to.
Yep.
Then there's Thor Ragnarok. And then after that is Black Panther. Now, Black Panther's already going to be established in Civil War, but the rumours are, especially after seeing the teaser for Age of Ultron, that he's going to have a very minor role in the next film anyway. And seeing Andy Serkis
very briefly in the trailer, he looks like the character Ulysses Klaue, who's like the main antagonist of the Black Panther, who's always after Black Panther's vibranium. So the fact that he's got his solo film so far down the line interests me. It seems like they're really sort of trying to sort of set this character as a big character. Then after that, you've got Avengers Infinity War Part 1. Then you've got Captain Marvel, then you've got Inhumans, and then you've got Avengers Infinity War Part 2, which I expect Infinity War Part 2 is just going to be all-out war. Every single character that MCU has ever had is going to feature somewhere in the film, and it's going to be huge. And I kind of hope that they leave pretty much all Phase 4 announcements until really close to Avengers Infinity War Part 2, because I don't want to think about what's coming next.
Exactly, yeah, you don't want to have it confirmed as to who will still standing.
I don't even want to sort of theorise what's coming next, because I can't imagine how big of a scale that war's going to be. My only prediction is that somewhere down the line, and it'll be sooner rather than later, I'm thinking in the next year or maybe 2 years, it's just going to be a small-scale announcement from Sony that they've come to a joint deal with Marvel and that Spider-Man's going back to Marvel under the Sony brand still. And the only reason I think that is because they've already talked this year about how they're losing money on the films, on the Spider-Man films in particular, but the Sony Film Distribution Company themselves are sort of reporting losses. Now, they've announced three new films. They've announced Sinister Six, Amazing Spider-Man 3, and they've announced a Venom spin-off. Well, Venom hasn't been an established character. The Sinister Six, okay, all good and well, it's got a writer, but the writer has now come out and confirmed, oh, I haven't started work on that yet. Like, nothing's set in stone yet. So although these dates are announced, I think they're sort of like speculative still.
Yeah.
I think this is them just putting it down as a placeholder and hoping for the best. I don't ever think that we're going to see X-Men go back to Marvel, because Bryan Singer's done such a good job at rebooting the franchise midway through the franchise. But with Spider-Man, I like Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. I hope that they can somehow bring him in and keep him as the established Spider-Man. But I don't think that we're going to see any more solo Spider-Man films for a while. I think he's going to appear in the same sort of way that the Hulk does, in that, you know, he's had a few films that kind of haven't worked, and so he's going to appear as a supporting character, and everyone's going to love the scenes that he's in. But at the start, I was thinking this was going to be, it was going to be pre-Civil War that we saw this announcement. I now think it's going to be post-Civil War, and maybe the events that happen in Civil War somehow lead to Spider-Man, you know, becoming part of the MCU. I don't know. But I expect we are going to get an announcement sometime in the next couple of years that Spider-Man's part of the MCU, which I'm going to be really happy about if that's true. Like, you know, I'm not going to be disappointed if we don't, because I'm enjoying where these Sony films are going. I'd like to see Venom done properly. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how they plan to do the Sinister Six if these things come into fruition. But let's discuss the most recent sort of development, which is the Avengers Age of Ultron trailer. Have you seen the extended trailer?
With a scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
I see the scene at the beginning. I remember when you told me, spoilers by the way.
Yeah.
I remember when you told me about this scene, about how it's sort of been half revealed, and how you'd said Mjolnir shifts slightly when Captain America, when Steve Rogers tries to move it. And it's so slightly. I like that no one notices but Thor.
Yeah.
And I like that even Steve Rogers doesn't notice.
It's that drop of his face.
Like that, was perfect timing. That what for?
Really good.
And then he can't lift it, and then there's the sigh of relief and the nothing. no, I really like that scene.
Yeah.
I'm glad that Don Cheadle's in it.
Yeah.
Even if it's just that little bit, I'm glad.
That was a really lovely little bit with him and Tony there.
Yeah. I'm glad to see him in it.
Robert Downey Jr.
The one thing I'm hoping for, I have read that Idris Elba is going to feature in a little cameo in Thor, Avengers 2. We've got Vision coming in, we've got Quicksilver coming in, we've got Scarlet Witch coming in, we've got, there's a potential that Black Panther's coming in. I'm really kind of hoping that Tom Hiddleston doesn't have a cameo.
I think you've got to
give him
some distance.
With all this going on, as beloved as Loki is at the moment with all the fans, I really do feel like it would take away something from the film by having him in it. But, I mean, do you have any predictions of what's going to happen? Do you have any sort of like, or anything personally you'd just like to see?
Well, I have the sort of prediction that I think you hoped wouldn't work, in that I think the Hulkbuster may well be in the first part of the film.
Yeah.
And I know you were hoping to for that to for act 2 or 3.
Yeah.
I think we might see that in the first, and I think that might set off the beginning of the others not being sure if they can trust Tony Stark if he had this backup plan for the Hulk. Does he have a backup plan for all of them?
I think you're absolutely right there.
To which the answer is almost certainly yes.
Of course, it does remind me somewhat of the Batman storyline of the Tower of Babel, in which.
In the end you can't really see Tony Stark. Them saying to Tony Stark, well, what did you have a plan for if you weren't bad?
Yeah.
You can't see Tony Stark saying, yes, it's the Avengers.
Yeah.
He's far too arrogant.
I think you are right in that his response, whenever it may be, to the Hulk, already having this Hulkbuster armor, they are going to question, you had a contingency plan?
The answer will probably, will probably be, well, yeah, why do you think I was, so blasé about telling Bruce Banner, he should be a bit more free with it. He should go with it a bit more. I knew I'd be able to handle it if things did go wrong.
I really do think that this is the point where we need to see a much more serious Tony Stark. Even in Iron Man 3, he was a little bit playful, especially when he was with the kid. And now he's moving on, especially with Civil War. He's not just going to be a politician. By the end of that film, if they're going by the comic books, he's going to be the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, are we going to start seeing a much more mature Tony Stark? Now, obviously, I still want to see that egotistical side to him when he's having his fighting and everything. Yeah. But I can't naturally see yet a way of him sort of going, I'm going into politics, without him just going egotistically, I think I can do this better than you, I'm going to do this. Because then I don't feel that the Civil War would mean as much, because he wouldn't have as much conviction in what he was doing. I feel I need to see more of that conviction. Yeah, he wants to save the world, but in Civil War, he wants to save the world not by fighting, even though he is fighting, not by fighting, but by controlling, by being in charge. So I'd like to see that. But I'm very excited about Ultron. Very excited about Ultron. I'm excited to see Vibranium being brought into it. However, the one thing I did note is, and this kind of annoyed me a little bit, and it might be nothing, I might be just being silly, but the thing that I noticed was at the end of the trailer, you've got Ultron singing the Disney bloody song, and his face is remarkably different to the first reveal of him in Entertainment Weekly.
Oh yes, I remember you saying. It was a shame he didn't look.
Yes.
Yeah. He didn't look closer to the comic book.
And in the Entertainment Weekly article, well, he was front page. He looked pretty menacing and pretty comic book Ultron and pretty badass. And in this, he looks a lot more humanized. Now, don't get me wrong, I like that. And I like that he's going to have these distinguishing features. So when he's on screen, you always know, okay, that one's Ultron. Because clearly, as you see from the trailer, there's going to be a lot more sort of robot-y, army-style Ultron things.
Well, I imagine it'll change, and I imagine he might have a faceplate. A la Iron Man.
Yeah, I'm expecting some.
And maybe it'll suddenly it'll slam down with a sharp snap.
Yeah.
And then there'll be the glowing red eyes and the weird sort of side mouth thing.
Yeah.
I think that could be a sort of a sort of dramatic jump, bit of a jump scare.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
But I am very much looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be great.
But let's move on to our feature, a little.
Yes. This week's
bad movie review.
This week's good review of a bad movie.
Now, do you want to tell us about the film? Tell us the name of the film.
Name of the film?
Yeah.
Is Titanic: The Legend Goes On.
Wait, I thought it was The Legend of Titanic.
Or The Legend.
Which one did you watch?
Titanic.
Did it have a rapping dog in it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Whichever one it was that then. It might be The Legend Goes On, actually. I can't remember. Yeah, no, I think it was.
It is.
Okay, cool.
I watched it. It's The Legend Goes On.
So tell us about it. I want to hear about the rapping dog.
Well, I have prepared a statement.
Yeah. Now you're not allowed to say anything bad about this film.
I'm not going to say anything bad about this film. I was just going to say that it's nice. It's wonderful to see a film that takes so many other great films and puts them all together. For instance, in this film, you not only get Titanic, you know, James Cameron's Titanic, the massive blockbuster hit.
Mm-hmm.
You also get Cinderella,
oh.
101 Dalmatians, An American Tale.
A masterpiece.
And yeah. Even a little bit of The Little Mermaid. Now, would you not want to see a film that had all those great films rolled into one?
I think I would.
I think you would too.
So let me take you
through how this film wonderfully blends all of these together.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's similar to James Cameron's Titanic.
How similar?
Not that similar.
Okay.
It's similar to James Cameron's Titanic in that you have a love story that bridges class gaps. You have, but as you pointed out to me last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a role reversal.
Yes, yeah.
In that, whereas James Cameron's Titanic has the poor lad and the rich lass, well, not necessarily rich, but, you know, from a high-class background.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
This one has the high-class young lad and the poor put-upon young lass. And this is where it strays into Cinderella territory.
Okay.
In that it's very much a tale that you know she's under the heel of her evil stepmother and stepsisters.
Naturally,
although they're not really stepmother and stepsisters, they are. It's her guardian, but Cinderella's. I cannot remember her name, so I shall call her Cinderella.
Uh-huh.
Cinderella's mother and father couldn't afford to take care of her, so they found a nice seeming woman who agreed to take her on as her ward.
Uh-huh.
And then disappeared with her.
Yeah.
Now she's basically a servant.
Okay.
For this nasty woman and her two horrid daughters. And yes, and then the 101 Dalmatians. There's not a huge amount of this in there, but it has Pongo and Purdy on board. Mm-hmm. with Purdy about to give birth.
Naturally.
But when another dog asks them to come and help, Pongo says, "Oh, I'll help," but Purdy certainly can't. She's about to present me with a litter.
Mm.
But, it's fair enough. You know, it's not right to ask a heavily pregnant dog
to
help steal food from the kitchens for a big animal feast.
Absolutely. And tell me about the rapping dog. Is that where the rapping dog comes into it, or does that come later?
We'll get there.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, the rapping dog.
If it's any consolation, I've seen the rapping dog.
Anyone who's heard of this film has seen the rapping dog.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the rapping dog. You have, underneath this all, you have a bunch of animals who've stowed away in the ship who are all excited to go to America. And this is where, you know, he brings in an American tail,
yeah.
You know, you've basically got Feifel with his Ma and Pa.
Are they as Jewish in it as Feifel is? Feifel and his family are?
You know, they might be, but it's hard to tell. I won't say that the film didn't make it clear.
But I
won't not say that either.
Yeah, okay.
And yes, now you have a bunch of happy little animals below decks, and they double as the mice from Cinderella.
Oh, I see, right.
So Cinderella loses a brooch, and the mice find it for her.
Uh huh.
Yeah, which is nice. It's tying it all together.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful scene where the Little Mermaid scene comes in that there's a chef in the kitchen.
I know the scene you're on about. I've seen that scene.
He gets very cross with the mice. And oh dear, he accidentally sets himself on fire. And then one of his assistants tries to put him out with whiskey, which only makes the fire bigger.
Oh no.
Hilarious.
What?
I know, right?
How stupid can you be?
I know, and the chef's saying, no, no, don't, because he can see it's whiskey on the bottle, but... Oh, and then there's a puff of flame, and they're all covered in black smoke.
Oh. When's the rapping dog coming to it?
There is. Well, the rapping dog is quite near the beginning, when Feifel and his family are settling in, and a cat appears. And,
bastard.
You know, there are no Cats in America song in this film.
Yeah.
But the dog steps in and shoos the cat away.
Mm-hmm.
And young Feifel says, thank you, and if it wasn't for the dog, he would now be in someone else's digestion.
Yeah.
Or digestive. And then the dog introduces himself with a nice little song.
Is it a song or is it a rap?
It's a bit of a rappy, hip hoppy song.
Can you sing some for us?
No. My musical talents aren't that good, I'm afraid. I'd love to. But I'm afraid no.
Okay.
You can look it up on YouTube.
Just search for
Horrible Rapping
Dog. You can't say anything bad about this film.
His name is Horrible.
Oh, God. Is the dog's name Horrible?
And also, you know, that's not how I feel about it. That's how someone on YouTube is.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
I think it's wonderful.
So how does the film end? How does it? Is it historically accurate?
Have you heard of the Titanic?
Is it historically accurate is what I want to know.
Well, fortunately, it seems that there are enough lifeboats for everyone.
Oh, so it's true to the story.
There are some people shouting women and children first, but you never see men struggling in the water. But Jack doesn't end up in the water with Rose. Jack puts Rose on a boat.
Uh-huh.
Where she happens to meet her long-lost mother, hurrah.
Who was also on the Titanic all this time.
Who was also on the Titanic. Who was actually Jack's nanny.
What?
I know, Can you imagine?
They couldn't afford to bring up this girl, but they could afford to go on the Titanic.
Well, you see, it's her mother, you see, you're misunderstanding. Her mother is in the service of young Jack.
Oh, I see. Right.
And this is years later. She's lost her daughter. You know, she's made a bit of money now.
Yeah.
But this nasty woman disappeared with her daughter.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, eventually they find one another Jack falls in the water, saving a young boy, and a boat comes to pick up the young boy he's floating around with. But then before Jack can get in, they have to row away from the Titanic as it's sinking, or their lifeboat will get dragged under with it. But wouldn't you know, miracle of miracles, Jack resurfaces next to Rose's boat.
That's so sweet.
And they have a lovely.
Did you get goosebumps?
I did.
Yeah.
Did they have a lovely moment of reunion? And then the sun starts to rise, and you see, you know, the calm water, and through all the horror and disaster, you know, there's the, you know, all the main characters made it. Not a single character you met drowned. Which is nice and life affirming.
Cue the rapping dog encore.
Well, just as the film seems like it's ending, a young girl says, "Hold on, wait, the movie's not finished yet. Don't you want to know what happens to everybody?" And we're treated to a nice 3 or 4 minute long a piece of exposition, which lets you know all about the dreary, drudging lives that the characters go on to lead in the new land of America.
That's nice. Oh, that sounds like a really, really nice film that shouldn't be on the top 5 of IMDb's worst ever movies created, as voted for by you.
I can't see how it was even considered.
Mm-hmm. And how was the animation?
The animation was there.
Could you see it was
on the film?
Was it more that you could see that they'd saved money in the animation to spend it elsewhere?
Well, there was less repeating of animation than perhaps the Secret Treasure of Machu Picchu had.
The repetition was almost a tradition in that film.
But one nice thing is whenever a character had a flashback,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of flashbacks, they only show you just a flash, as the name suggests. You only see an instant of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's hard to remember what they're thinking back to, because, you know, it could have been minutes ago.
Yeah.
So this film, rather than just flashing back, when a character thinks back to a previous scene, they play the whole previous scene out again for you.
Oh, I see.
So you fully remember what happened in that scene.
Yeah. Okay. That's clever, because you might have forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, clearly a lot of things happen in this film. It can't have you forgetting major plot points. Because then, you know, where would we be without a plot?
Where indeed.
Okay. I accept.
In summation, I give this 4.5 jack of potatoes out of 17 bananas.
Okay. I accept that your review is over. Now, in 3 words only, how bad was this film?
Completely fucking tedious.
Is it the worst film you've ever seen?
No, I think the Secret Treasure of Machu Picchu is probably worse. It's just really? This thing. Yes, no, this. Don't get me wrong. This had a story.
Yeah.
There, and you know, and the characters, what the characters were doing, made sense. But it just went on and fucking on. Maybe it's the fact that I was watching it on YouTube and I could see the bar not fucking moving at all.
Okay, so
it just went on and on and oh, then there's yeah, the animation, the animation isn't good. I mean, yeah, there seems to be no sense of proper timing. I mean,
yeah,
and none of the sound effects are at the right time, and all the voices don't quite match
same
up.
Same as Machu Picchu, then.
And yeah, and all these talking animals barely fucking say anything.
Yeah,
you can tell it's been. I think it was made by an Italian something.
Yeah, they
or
are
other.
Italian. Yeah.
And it was almost as if the dubbed English voice actors weren't sure what to do.
Okay.
Or whoever was making it, putting it into English, wasn't quite sure what to do with various bits and pieces. So they just had the animals endlessly grunting and going, oh, yes, ooh, yeah.
And in your honest opinion, how good is the Rapping Dog? I have seen the Rapping Dog.
It's so out of place.
I know, it's so out so of place. Random, isn't it?
The rest of the, I'll say this for the film. The rest of the film does have, you know, a consistent tone.
Except for the
Rapping Dog. And it comes out of fucking nowhere.
Honestly, it's just no setup to it either.
No setup, no context. You know, he says, you know, and they say, who are you to this dog? And he says, oh, I'm the top dog. And then it suddenly jumps to this rap song about how he, you know, how you should know who he is. And so he's going to tell you who he is. Gee, and it's so out of left field. I mean, there are other bits of music in there.
Yeah.
Mostly some sort of the ship's entertainment singer woman mm-hmm. singing some, you know, dreary love song. But at least that sort of fits in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not a fucking Hollaback Girl song.
Hollaback Girl. Okay, so
it just went on and on.
What have I got to watch this week?
Okay, well, I stepping it up a little.
God, you can't say those words. Last time
I
did
would
film,
like
you didn't step it up, right? You thought you were just giving me a shit film, and you well stepped it up. Go on, what am I watching?
I would like you to give me a good review of Tommy Wiseau's The Room.
Right.
I don't know if you know anything about the film.
I've never heard of it.
Well, I will. It's easily Google. Just Google The Room.
Wiseau, The Room. See, already, right, under Tommy Wiseau, The Room, is Tommy Wiseau, The Room, Game. So, it's got to be tedious enough for someone to build to... Oh, God, this looks awful. The film centres on Johnny, a man who has it all. Hold on. Great friends, a good job, gorgeous fiance named Lisa, but Lisa's innocent act masks the fact she's looking to bring Johnny down, and her manipulations are tearing Johnny apart. As Lisa informs her cancer-ridden mother Claudette that Johnny hit her, and he did not hit her, that is bullshit, he did not. Honest to God, this is the description.
No, that's the wonderful thing. They're lines from the film. I've never actually seen the film myself, but I've seen sort of reviews of it.
Johnny's best friend Mark finds his resistance to Lisa's seductive charms weakening. Meanwhile, local orphan Denny looks up to Johnny and needs the older man's help after the teen rips off a drug dealer. What kind of drugs? It doesn't matter. Then guys,
see, don't read anymore. You'll spoil your review.
Sorry, because the end of the fucking the end of the blurb for this film is, what kind of drugs? It doesn't matter. Them guys play football in tuxedos because you can play football anywhere. This movie is seriously not to be missed. What kind of blurb is that? What the hell am I about to watch? I'm seriously worried.
It's going to be quite a treat for me, where the audience, and you.
Where is this accessible? Can I get it on like YouTube or something?
I'm sure you'll be able to find it online. It's not like the Secret Treasure of Machu Picchu.
Yeah,
we'll have to find a DVD of it. You'll find it online somewhere.
Okay, Tommy Wiseau. Good God. How long is this film as well? You haven't watched it, you say?
I've never watched it, no. I've seen hilarious reviews of it. But they were allowed to say bad things about it.
Oh, right, I see. Well, that's okay then. I can access it online.
I'm sure you can find it.
Yeah, I think I've got it.
Okay.
Let's play.
Right, well, you can all look forward to that next week, listeners.
And, I'm seriously worried.
It'll be a treat for us.
You know what's coming if this film is as bad as I think it's going to be. You know that, don't you? Yeah, I can get the whole film. You know what's coming. I might just get you to watch the full version of Little Panda Fighter instead.
Well, we'll find out next week, won't
we? Okay, well, thank you for listening.
Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Not sure what next week's podcast will be. You'll find out next week.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Kisses and good night.